Hello, everyone, and welcome to Garden Gossip, the home and garden show, with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Welcome to Big Blend Radio's Garden Gossip Show, and today we do have some gossip. It's in East Tennessee, out in Johnson City. We are going to visit our friend Tori Cox. Tori is an awesome potter who makes these beautiful pots for your plants, and so we love that, and we love her work, and so we're visiting her on her, she's in her patio with all her plants, because Tori, I think you win in having the most houseplants we've ever seen. So how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day. I'm glad to be outside. It's nice to talk to you. It's nice to see you all again.
I know. Nice to see you. And you've got the awesome garden, vegetables, and you compost, and you're, I think you guys live like completely, you coexist with nature. And I think that's really cool. And I think that connects also with your pottery, because all the pottery has these beautiful earth tones, nature tones, there's colors of nature, and clay is nature.
Yeah.
It's all connected.
It's definitely of the earth. So yeah. I love playing in the mud. It's really great.
So what led you to pottery?
I took my first pottery class November of last year, November 2020.
Oh, wow.
A friend asked me if I wanted to do it with her. And we signed up for a 6-week course. And I didn't really know. I've always been very crafty and interested. And I've always been some form of an artist or craftsperson. And I just fell head over heels for it. It just really matched things I like to do, a little bit of like engineering brain and designing certain designs and then colors and carving. And it just really hit all the right places for me. So I've been full bore since then with the pottery.
I know. Now you've got a whole online shop. Everyone can go to your website. Everyone go to what? Give it to everybody. What is the website? Because I'm going to get it wrong here.
It's Tori's Handcrafted, and Tori's is like plural, but it doesn't have the, you know, the apostrophe. So it's Tori's and then handcrafted.com.
Very cool. Okay. I love following what you've been crafting on Instagram. That's like every day it was like, what's Tori making? So you've got quite a good following there of people checking out what you're making. Do you only like, you know, serve people locally, or if someone buys online on your website, can you ship it in the U.S.?
Yeah, I do ship to everywhere in the U.S. Not shipping internationally yet. Shipping internationally is its own bear. So right now I'm just doing the U.S., but I've shipped the majority of the pottery I've sold. I've actually shipped. I had a lot of experience shipping plants before I started shipping pottery. So it was an easy transition to just start selling online, because I had already kind of done a lot of shipping through the pandemic through the plant trading hobby, which is how I kind of got into all this plant stuff.
Well, look at her and the plants here. So
I would think shipping plants would be way more complicated than pottery.
It's actually really similar. Plants and pottery have similar needs in the mail. Plants, obviously they need water. That's the thing that's different, but a lot of it is about the space in the box and the insulation, and it's similar things. You just have to pack them really well so they don't get damaged.
So what about the shipping of plants across a border, and that might have a disease or that?
There are regulations regarding that. There are even regulations within the U.S., but as long as you're inside the U.S., shipping plants as a hobby, and most of the time we try and ship them without the soil. We ship them bare root. So that's something that if you're selling plants and you're a nursery, then you do have to get inspections, and certain states have stricter regulations, like California is a little different, but for the most part, for cuttings and things like that, it's pretty straightforward to ship them within the U.S.
Actually, California seems to be different about lots of stuff lately.
But
with the, you know, that's interesting, because, you know, we always call it like nip and tuck when you go walking the neighborhood, you know, walk the dog, you know, about this. You walk through the neighborhood. I'm not talking plastic surgery. It's all like Ooh, look at that leaf. Ship a little nip and tuck.
And tuck it in.
Go propagate it at home. Have you been guilty of this? Because we do want the gossip.
No, actually, I got pretty, that practice in the plant community is very frowned upon.
Yes.
Just because, you know, like, I think it's different if you have like a neighbor and they have like an outdoor plant that, and you ask them, can I get a cutting of this? You know what I mean?
You're absolutely right.
Sometimes if people have taken advantage of access to a plant by taking a cutting and they post it like on a, on a group online, they get torn to shreds because within the houseplant community, that's really considered theft. Even though I totally understand, it's very tempting, but people really frown upon that sort of a behavior.
Well, it's kind of rape of the leaf.
It is theft. I mean, it's like, oh, you have a maybe a cushion on a chair on your porch, and I'll just go take your cushion. There's no difference between that and taking a cutting off a plant. It's theft. You're on somebody else's property and you're taking something that you don't own.
Well, it's a good thing grandma's passed away. She would just go, and she's older. She's like, nobody suspects like an elder woman.
I'm like, everybody knows what you're doing.
I'm like, that doesn't mean it's right, grandma, but you know.
My mother was totally guilty of walking the neighborhood and she used the term nip and tuck. Yeah, and I didn't know what that was as a kid.
I do remember digging daylilies on the side of the road with my mother when I was a young girl.
See?
In the ditch because they grow wild. So it was more like transplanting them.
That's a lift and separate.
But then, you know, you don't know what you're digging up. Like maybe, you know, species that belong and only can live there, but let's just my parents went out to the desert and we would come back with tortoises.
That's wrong.
And all kind of plants that they found there.
Wrong again.
I know that.
Our national park friends are crowding.
I was a kid, but they would load it up and take it back.
Wrong again. Don't do it.
Don't do it. And it's mean and it's cruel to the tortoises, especially.
Oh, that was bad. That's not a good thing.
They really don't want lettuce. They'll eat it, but they really want their cactus and their plants that grow wild where they were raised naturally. Mm-hmm. Just saying. But anyway, we digress.
It's garden gossip. We can talk about what we want. So Tori, what do you grow in your neighborhood? Let's talk about that. What's going on in the hood?
In my garden?
Yeah, you've got a lot going in your garden. Like if you were to count how many plants you have, different species, would be like
outside or inside?
In both. Like, I mean, how many plants?
Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. Well, I have over 200 houseplants. Mm-hmm. Some of those are repeats of species, but most of them are unique or varieties, like a variety of a species. Outdoors, I don't know. We have like a whole, you know, maybe I don't know how big our garden is. We have our pretty big garden with all your standard vegetables, but then
apple trees. Oh my gosh, those are antique apple trees, right? They're like,
I don't know how old the big one is. Pretty old. I think the younger one is probably maybe 10 years old. It looks like, or something like that.
The big one being held up. That's pretty. That's.
Yeah, we got married under that tree, so
that's so cool.
It's a majestic old apple tree. And I also have a collection of like medicinal herbs and flowers and things that are perennials, especially interested in like native plants that are native to here. So I have things that are both medicines and foods planted kind of around the periphery of the property. And we actually inherited a lot of different species from the people who lived here before had planted a lot of trees and shrubs and bulbs, which is something I've never really gotten too much into, but there are a lot here on the property. So we're pretty overrun with plants at this point.
It's very healthy.
And you have a lot of butterflies.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, my husband planted the flowers, that row of flowers in the garden specifically to attract pollinators. So it's been really nice to see the butterflies are coming on it.
Yeah.
I love that you're doing medicinal herbs too, because I think we tend to run for the pill bottle when sometimes we have to know what we're doing or taking or, you know what I mean? All of that. It's like, be cautious. So don't start, you know, eating everything in your garden, people, and blaming me when you have an hallucination trip. But you know what I mean? You have to know what you're talking about. But I think there's a lot of native species that we've lost. I remember getting so stuck into herbs and how we're actually losing species of native herb species across the country. And if we kept with our native, I know things are changing as climate change is happening, but if we had more of our native plants there, and we utilize those herbs healing-wise within our native area, we'd be healthier as individuals.
Yeah, I think having a relationship with the plants that grow in your environment is really critical on like many levels. Like, it's simple things. Like, if you get a bee sting, knowing that you can run out and grab some plantain, which I don't think is a native herb, but that grows everywhere. Just having a relationship with the plants around you, it makes you more connected to the land. And it also is empowering in terms of being able to take care of yourself, or, you know, knowing what to do if something happens. Obviously, it's not a replacement for, you know, if there's an emergency, call 911.
That's what I'm saying.
The plants. But yeah, it's nice to have those access to those things like on a daily basis and get to know the plants and how beautiful they are, what they can do for you. And just they're beautiful, and they are functional, and they're the whole package.
When you walk outside, I mean, it's so relaxing in a garden as opposed to concrete blocks and that kind of thing. And there are so many native plants that my grandmother was always picking something from the garden before she would ever think of calling a doctor. But nobody ever died, you know. If it was serious, then you go get a doctor. But there was a lot of things, especially different little rashes and stuff. She would go pick something from the garden, mash it up, and put it on you. And she calls.
That's what I do when I get a bug bite. I go grab some plantain and I chew it up in my mouth and put it on there. It's as effective as anything else that I know to do.
So it works. You know, it's just funny that we don't trust it so much anymore. You want the pill, but the pill is full of other things to make it a pill than what you need for the medication you actually need, which is sitting there in your garden sometimes.
It's neat. I think it's interesting for people to learn. And I think what's cool about your pottery is that you're connecting. It's like another step of connecting, you know, and you're thinking about what you're planting in the pottery. And what you've done, which is interesting on your website, you have like, well, it's on your website, but it's interesting that you're creating it. We have the semi-hydroponic, right? So.
Yep.
So this, tell us about that. And you have these doubles. And so with your pottery, it's not like, oh, here's just a pretty pot you've carved. I love that you even use nature in the carvings on there. And again, like the earth colors. But and you go seasonal with this. Look at the ones with the sunflower. Oh, and your sunflowers rock, by the way. but when you think about it, with the different plants going in there, you're kind of teaching people to have a little bit more kind of slow down with your plants and understand what they need.
Yeah, well, finding the right pot for a plant is really important. And plants, kind of like hermit crabs, they graduate out of their pots. So I think finding the right home for your plant and then being able to, you know, change that as the plant changes and grows is a really important skill if you're going to keep houseplants, and or a lot of houseplants. But the semi-hydroponic planters are a specific way of growing houseplants, and you grow them without soil. You grow them in, there's different types of what we call substrates. Substrate's kind of like a replacement for soil, but this is a piece of LECA, which is an expanded clay pebble, and you can grow a plant completely in the LECA so that there's no soil. And you can get certain issues with soil. There's definitely pros and cons to both approaches, but what's nice about LECA is that you keep a water reservoir at the bottom of the plant. So there's water down here, and then the LECA wicks the water up to the roots of the plant. And so if you've ever been either a overwaterer or an underwater, like killed your plants either way, LECA is a good choice for people who struggle with watering, picking up the watering part of things, because it really solves that problem. That's been the main benefit for me. Other people say it reduces pests and things like that. You do have to supplement LECA with nutrients for the plants because it's not soil. It doesn't have all of the nutrients. So you have to have a supplement, like a fertilizer and that sort of thing to help with it too. So it's a little bit, it can be a little bit more complicated than soil, but for me, any plants that I have trouble with maintaining my water, I move them to LECA and it just helps with that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So would you do that for outdoor plants too?
Yeah, you can. I don't have as much trouble with my outdoor plants with soil issues because plants outdoors, they get a lot of sun and they get a lot of airflow. And there's a lot of those things that like the house environment is like harder to grow a plant in sometimes. Outdoors in the summertime, they're usually pretty happy and I don't have a lot of the same problems. So most of the plants that I'm doing this with are indoor tropical house plants.
Very cool. So, and again, goes with clay, right? So that's where your semi-hydroponic, could people use soil for the semi-hydroponic?
Some of them, like this this one right here is a two-piece planter. And this one you could use with soil because the holes are at the bottom. And so the water can drain all the way out. For a house plant, and I know this kind of goes opposite of what I just said about the semi-hydro, but for house plants growing in soil, you don't want them to have a pool of water at the bottom because it will rot their roots. And overwatering and root rot is one of the main reasons that house plants die. So this system where you have the holes at the bottom and you have a second piece would work. You just wouldn't keep water in the saucer.
Yeah.
Whereas the one I just showed, this one, you wouldn't want to use because the holes are actually up here. And anytime you watered your plant, you would get a pool of water at the bottom. So like this, not safe for soil, but this one and some of my other ones are safe for soil.
Wow. That's interesting. This is so cool. And then
the roots need to breathe. When there's soil, there's air pockets within the soil, and they need to breathe. And when you saturate them with water from the top, and then it comes down at the bottom, now you're pretty much putting your plant in the swimming pool, and there's no room for them.
If you
do it that way.
And you don't want them to be in a chlorine swimming pool, isn't that right?
No.
No. They need to breathe. They need the oxygen, so. You have to make sure there's always a little bit of dry something somewhere so they can breathe.
Yeah, and if you are growing plants in soil, the composition of your soil is really important. I mix my own soil. I do not buy potting soil from the store. I actually buy the ingredients and mix it myself because I figured out what soil composition works for me, the way I water. Some people need a denser soil because I'm an overwaterer, so I go like the most airy, the biggest chunk, you know, but everyone needs to figure out what works for them, their plants, their growing environment.
That's interesting. You're mixing your own soil. So do you do soil tests, like a litmus test to see how the nutrients, or you just kind of know the feel?
Oh, it's just like a recipe. It's like one part pumice, one part worm castings. I do, I'm trying to think of the other ingredients offhand, perlite. So I just have like a recipe and I mix it all up.
Now, are you going to share the recipe?
Yeah, I just have to remember it offhand because it's always changing. Let's see. I do one part cocoa core, which is the stuff cool. that holds water. I do one part perlite, one mm-hmm. part pumice, mm-hmm. one part worm castings, and then I do half part activated charcoal, horticultural charcoal. If it's a big plant, like not a baby plant, I also put in orchid bark chunks into it, and that helps make the soil like chunky. But baby plants, I don't put that in because until yeah. they get like a pretty good root system, sometimes that's like too chunky for them.
Yeah.
So that's my formula, which oh, that's probably cool. going to be different next week because I'm always like tweaking it.
Oh,
like,
that is cool. Well,
it's yeah. almost like in a way you have to tweak it per plant family.
Yeah, that's a whole other level. You hit the nail on the head because when I plant up a syngonium, which is a plant that doesn't like to dry out as much as a philodendron, when I plant up a syngonium, I actually try and get the like heavier part of the soil. Like when I scoop it out of my mixture, I just try and get like the heavy parts from the bottom. Whereas if it's a plant that really doesn't like to be wet, like a lot of the philodendrons do not like wet feet, I'll actually scoop from like the top where the more chunky is. But it's just a lot of times it's just like a feel, like that feel of like, I feel like this is right. And sometimes I get it wrong and the plant isn't happy, but you do tweak it for what type of plant you're working with.
Right. And one of the things I've learned is that when your plant, she's normally green leafed, starts getting yellow at the edges, that's overwatering.
Yeah,
that's a sign. Yep. If you're not watering enough, it doesn't get yellow at the edges. That's a whole different look. It wilts.
Yeah. But then
overwatered plants can also wilt. But that stripe of yellow around the edge of the leaf, that's an overwatering thing.
Yeah. And if that happens, you should get the plant out of the soil ASAP. Like, don't let it sit, like, put it at the top of your to-do list to get the plant out. And you can treat them with diluted hydrogen peroxide, and that will help them. But you need to move them into a completely different soil so that it doesn't have that rotten bacteria in it anymore. And then, like, let it not be watered for a little while. And then water it like a week later with hydrogen peroxide.
Wow. I didn't know you could do that. Wow.
Yeah. Huh. It's really interesting. If you water a plant that has root rot with hydrogen peroxide, you know how hydrogen peroxide gets bubbles and gets warm? Yeah. Like you'll see the soil will get bubbly with it if it's got bad root rot.
Wow.
But, oh, I want to do it. It's like weird science.
You could have done it to some of my plants because a couple of mine are looking bad. So it's okay. It happens.
It's like a dentist planter person.
The chompers.
Open wide, put in the hydrogen, go, you got the black.
Listen, hydrogen peroxide, I think, is one of the most miracle things ever.
That and
apple cider vinegar, those two things
do so much.
You can just fix so much. So, but now you also do macrame.
I do. Macrame is more of a labor of love.
That's cool.
I love it.
Yeah. I knit and I saw these planters. I've got one right here that are really easy to make if anyone is a knitter who's listening. This is a really easy hanger, and all it is a square. Like when you learn to knit, a lot of times you will knit like a washcloth or something. Well, this is basically a washcloth, and then the two things are attached to the edges, and then when you put the plant in it, it kind of like stretches out and it gives it this cool shape. But really, this is a super easy
shape. Cool.
It's just a knit square, and I think this is a really cool thing. If anyone is a knitter, this is an easy plant hanger to make.
Could you do that through crochet?
You could do that.
Yeah. I would think crochet. A crochet is not as stretchy as knitting.
That's right,
is.
It's tight. So,
but it would still work.
It might not
get quite the dramatic fingers coming up and over, but it should work.
Short ones.
I saw something that you posted. I think it was on Instagram where you did a macrame, but it had like leaf patterns coming down.
Yeah, I make these single. I don't have one handy, but I do make these and it has like a vine pattern that goes through it. That's one of my favorites to do.
Really cool.
That's cool.
That's really cool. I mean, I remember macrame when I was, you know, a kid, and it was out in the 60s and 70s, you know, it was a big deal. And I used to make macrame earrings. When we lived in South Africa, it was a thing. Mm-hmm. We called it macrame over there.
Oh.
I'm having a hard time even saying it now. I'll go back. I'll start macrame. Sounding Dutch again.
That's funny.
But, yeah, macrame. That's what we called it. But I used to do, because I used to make jewelry, and I used to make earrings, and they would just twirl around, these little danglies twirl just because of the tension of the stitch, which was fun to do. You know, but you do jewelry too.
I do. Yeah. I didn't make these. I'm not responsible for these, but I've been working with jewelry for a long time, probably close to 20 years at this point. I started out by playing with the copper. My dad is a contractor, and on the job site, I would play with the like extra little bits of copper wire when they were wiring a house. And so I've been playing with copper since I was like a little kid. And that's still my favorite metal to use. So I will like shape things out of copper and then hammer them on the anvil and make things that are like monstera leaves, or I just do like a lot of hoops and dangly things out of copper.
I don't sell
that stuff. That's more a labor of love. I just focus on the pottery, but the jewelry is a passion of mine.
Now, do you go and sell at like local flea markets and farmers markets and things like that?
I mostly do like art pop-ups or vendor events at local plant shops, because most of my pottery is plant related. So I've been mostly trying to do things like that. And then sometimes they have local craft shows, and I've done a couple of those. I don't have a lot of time. I'm actually a grad student studying, getting a master's in computer science. So I have to put it in where I can. I know, I'm a nerd.
No, you should be proud of it, because you're good at it, what you're doing. I think this is cool, all the science with the plants.
That's so cool.
I geek out on biology. I love it. I just want to see cells moving around and do all kinds of weird things. It's cool. It's cool. But now, okay, so you've got this, you've got a shopping cart, you've got a business going. Did you think that would happen from, you know, it really does start with your love of plants. So did you have plants as kids, like, as a kid, like you'd like, you know,
my mom had a big ficus tree, I remember, but no, not a lot of plants. My mom knows a lot about plants, and she has an extremely green thumb, but she doesn't keep a lot of them. So I didn't get into plants until I bought my first house in my early 30s, and I started buying house plants to keep in my house, and that was how I got into house plants. But we didn't really have much of a garden when I was growing up. A lot of this stuff is newer to me, from like my 20s and 30s.
Okay, so garden gossip time. We want the gossip now. You get to go house sit, because I know you know about house sitting, anywhere in the world. Like, if you could go to anyone's house and house sit, where would you go, and what three plants would you take with you?
But about whose house would you
sit? That's what I'm saying. Whose house is it? Are you going to house sit? But what three plants would you take with you, just, you know, for company, that you must have them for that experience? Because I know you have to talk to your plants. There's no way you don't talk to them, right?
I don't really talk to my plants. I know a lot of people do. I don't really talk to mine. I'm not an inanimate object talker, I guess. I don't know. Not that they're inanimate objects.
But do you play music for them?
Nope.
She just makes them soil, Nancy. She plays with worm poop and compost.
Dude.
But how many systems you have, like composting deluxe? I think you've got like a good composting system that's intense.
I have too many streams.
So that's what you're doing. That's
I'm
cool.
I'm not sure I can think of like an individual person that I would want to house it for, like that I know personally. But I think one place that would be amazing to visit would be the Philippines. Like, if I could go visit a plant person. The Philippines have like a pretty amazing set of biodiversity, and with it being like an island nation, I would love to find another plant person there or somewhere in like a tropical region and just go and learn about how like plants, not necessarily house plants, but just like the plants of a really different environment than the one that I know right now. So
well, it's tropical.
Yeah, yeah. Tropical.
You'll have the humidity, you know about that.
You want tropical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds cool, though. I mean, yeah, the Philippines. That would be fun. That would be fun. Now, what plants would you take there to introduce to them?
I heard this really interesting story about how someone from a tropical place took a dandelion with them, a dandelion seed back with them, and then tried to grow it. And they were so proud. They like had it on their mantle when it like sprouted and got a flower, and they were so proud and they showed it off, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's so interesting that things that are everyday occurrences or even nuisances for us in other places are, you know, a novelty. And I feel like that's what the houseplant community, like a lot of these plants are very common, or some of them are even invasive species in other places. And like I think Monsteras, the big Swiss cheese plants, I think some places they are an invasive species. I don't know. I was reading a little bit about it, but I think it would be cool to take some like local plants that we have here, maybe something that's like native to this region, like our those big oxeye daisies that we have, I think are really cool, or any of the like just the medicinal plants that we have in this region, I think would be fun to take over and just kind of like show them.
Maybe so. Aloes might be good.
I don't know where aloes are from. Do
I know they're in Africa. Africa and Mexico, yeah. They were there too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I grew up with, they're African, there's African aloes, but I think they're also South America.
I don't know if it's native, but one really cool plant is jewelweed. Do you know about jewelweed?
Yes.
With the little popping flowers? That would
pretty.
Be a really cool thing to take.
That would be cool.
Show.
Yeah. Pokeberry.
Oh yeah, People here eat poke salat, which is when poke weed is really, really small. This is like a mountain thing. I think I don't know a lot about
salad,
it. I'm not from here. But when the poke weed is very small, you can cut it and eat it. It's poisonous when it's full size. Not like killing poisonous, but you know, like not, you know, like you don't really want to eat it when it's big. And I think the berries are a little poisonous. But when it's small.
This
people
is
Poke
Salad Annie. Is that the song? Poke Salad Annie.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Got your granny. Is that it? Poke Salad Annie.
Maybe. Yeah. I'm not an expert on that.
but so you can eat it when
but
it's small.
I have had pokes a lot. So when I lived, we're in the mountains here, but I lived a little bit further up in them. So pokeweed. Pokeweed is cool when it's little.
Well, we used to eat miner's lettuce. Like, I don't know if you get it. We'd get it in California when we lived in the mountains. Miner's lettuce and eat that.
It's not super common here. It's pretty rare. So,
well, this is cool.
I haven't eaten it. I've seen it once, but I haven't eaten it. I grow a plant called Sochan. I don't actually know a whole lot about it, and I probably should, but I know it as a Native American food and a green, and it grows these beautiful like yellow sunflowers that are nice too.
See,
yeah,
I think we should have a party where we have everyone call in from around the world and they bring a native plant
that'd be fun.
Like a native plant party, because people shy away from native plants and don't realize the beauty of these flowers of them too, you know.
Yeah,
it's just like even when you go hiking, and then like it happened in Arkansas, and I know here where we are in North Carolina, you're hiking and all of a sudden there's a magnolia tree in the middle of, you know, it's a hardwood forest, but then here's in Louisiana. I flipped out the first time when I saw a magnolia tree in a forest. Everyone's looking at me like, so what? That they grow here. I'm like, dude, you only see them like in downtowns all manicured. This is a magnolia and it's blooming in
wild.
A forest. This is like real stuff. you know, just totally flipping out. And, you know, people think I'm nuts, but I still can't. I mean, I'm still over just magnolias out in the forest like they belong. Just trip me out that you see them.
They came from somewhere.
Yeah. You know?
So when you go to where they came from, you're like, oh, you're not from a big box store.
Yeah. 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 Well, Tori, it has been so much fun chatting with you. Good gossip.
Thank you. Some good gossip. Yeah, it's really fun. Yeah. I learned a lot. It
was great. Let's go have some poke any salad. But let's not know.
I wonder if that I want to have some now.
Oh, good.
Let's see. If it's, I wonder if it's related.
You're going to have to wait till spring.
Okay.
Yeah. Because right now the pokeberries, trees or bushes, shrubby things are big with berries.
Yeah.
The berries are out.
It's a springtime thing.
Yeah. And you don't want to eat the purple berries. You got to be careful of the purple berries. You'll see things. Just saying. So everyone, Tori'sHandcrafted.com is the website. And she's on Facebook under Tori's Handcrafted. And Instagram under Tori's Handcrafted. You got to follow her on Instagram. It's fun to follow and see all the new creations she's got. And it's been super fun. Thank you for joining us.
Thank
here
you
on
so
Gossip.
Much.
You take
Thank
care.
You. You too.
Plant take out. Care.
Here comes the finger.
Do it.
Uh-oh.
Give it. Oh, she's doing it. Oh.